CliffCentral.com. Unbranded on CliffCentral.com.
Welcome back to Unbranded. I'm Timothy Maurice, and I am extraordinarily excited to be back in studio to bring you another podcast episode of Unbranded, where we look at the science of human and brand behavior, the intersection. How do people impact brands, and how do brands impact people? How are our psyches affected? How are our identities affected by social narratives, sort of community, nation narratives, and how do we impact those narratives? How do we change society's idea of how it sees itself through our own personal initiative and drive? So the intersection between human and brand behavior, that's what this show is all about. If you haven't downloaded the podcast, you can go to iTunes or you can go to CliffCentral.com. You can download Cliff Central app and you can engage, you know, many, many shows. We have over 2 years of show, 2 years of history for this particular show. Everything from the psychology of shoes to dealing with everything around gender dynamics, the narrative around women. There will be a show you'll find fascinating. So I today want to sort of dip outside of the politics of race and the politics of dealing with everything from, you know, the chaos in society, the politics of, you know, it's just crazy right now. So I just want to have fun today. And today we're going to talk about the science of laughter. And there is an entire field called gerontology, which is the study of laughter. Now, people who have dedicated their entire careers to this scientific discipline. And today you can really expect sort of, you know, the understand the function of laughter, the biology of it, how it helps us create social bonds, how it helps us deal with pain tolerance, everything to, you know, how it boosts your immune system and makes you more likable in a public setting. So today we're going to have a chat. I've got in studio our super cool producer, Palesa, who's going to have this conversation with me. How are you doing, Palesa?
I'm good. And how are you?
I'm often. Do you enjoy laughing?
I laugh a lot.
Do you?
Yeah.
Like, are you single?
Yes.
Are you? Like, yep. What would you say are the top three things you would like in a partner? Is laughing one of them?
Yes. Like, he needs to have that sense of humor. He needs to make me laugh, one.
Okay. And if he can't make you laugh, but he has everything else?
No. Then he's going to be that serious type of boyfriend. I'm not...
Wow.
I'm not looking for that. I just need someone who I can be comfortable with, laugh with, make jokes with. So if you're going to be all serious.
You know, in a UK study, 95% of over 4,000 women said they want somebody who can make them laugh.
True.
So we're going to explore this. And we're going to explore why this is the case. And we're also going to explore why it is women laugh more than men.
Mm.
But also why there are more male comedians
than women.
Female. And there's a deep psychological reason why. So that's what we're going to explore today. This is Unbranded. I'm Timothy Maurice. You can hit me up at Timothy, M-A-U-R-I-C-E, Timothy Maurice. And I am thrilled to be able to say that I love to laugh. And in this conversation, you're going to learn particularly why, if you combine laughter and exercise, you get more health benefits.
Okay.
And yoga. Guys, there's so much I want to share with you. But let's just get started now. I want to share some research by Professor Sophie Scott, who dedicated her career from the University College of London. One study found that she did, people laugh 7 times for every 10 minutes of conversation.
What?
Yeah. So see, here's the thing. Laughter is a social dynamic. People laugh more in the context of dealing with someone else than with jokes.
Mm-hmm.
So jokes are not necessarily that funny. In fact, it's usually behavior. In fact, most of the stuff we laughed at is not really sort of verbalized.
Mm-hmm.
You ever notice when you're with your friend, they can just make a look?
Yes, then you know.
You're right?
Yeah.
or a gesture, a particular sort of behavior is the stuff. So, you know, the science really suggests that that's how we know who we're close to. It's how you know who you can trust. It's how you know whether or not you can sort of find someone to be the type of person you can move forward in life with, which is why you're saying you do like someone in your relationship, someone very intimate you can laugh with. So laughter is a signal to many parts of the brain to be able to say, this is somebody I can sort of connect with. in this sort of study, it helps us, the study revealed that it really helps us maintain deeper bonds. So people you can't laugh with, you'll always really sort of struggle with. Now, let's talk about the biological dynamics of it. Each sound simply reflects the muscles in the chest squeezing out air from our rib cages under very high pressure. So biologically speaking, those muscles squeezing together, the sound that comes out. And the thing I love about laughter, it's a universal human sort of language. I don't care what country you're in the world. You know, people express thrill different ways in different parts of the world. People express all different types of emotion differently, but laughter is expressed the same.
Yeah.
There are many studies where scientists have arrived in a remote tribe in a remote village, and they could not connect on anything else except for laughter. So, you know, from a evolutionary perspective, from a brain perspective, I want to just sort of get some of this deeper sort of stuff out of the way. Laughter comes from our more primitive, our basic sort of brain system that looks after vocalization in all mammals. So unlike speech, laughter comes from a lower place. Speech is more a higher cognitive function. Laughter comes from a much lower place. This is why people who have strokes can, you know, you can be robbed of your ability to speak, but they can still laugh. You see? So they have suffered damage to the brain areas that enable them to speak, but the older emotional system is still very much intact. So if you look at this particular study done by Professor Scott, they've also found that we're not the only ones who laugh. Primates such as gorillas, chimpanzees, orangutans, and even rats. They found that by tickling rats, the rats find themselves have the distinct ability to laugh. And the reason why scientists know this is that if you tickle a baby rat, when the baby grows up to an adult rat, they have more propensity, the ability to laugh more.
What?
Yeah. So this is very deep. It's wired in us on a much, much deeper level. And maybe laughter has evolved to be an important signifier of play, because we love to play. A sign that we're having fun, no one is going to get hurt, and this is all a game. So if you feel safe, laughter allows us to feel safe. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to do ill intentions when you're laughing with someone. Mm-hmm. So from an evolutionary perspective, we believe, and scientists believe, that if you see someone and you can engage with them in a laughter, then you reduce your chances of dying. That ultimately, if someone is enjoying you,
yeah,
if they're having fun with you, there's a good chance you'll be able to move forward together. So this is a critical part of the conversation. There are also serious health benefits to laughing. Do you ever feel better after a really good laugh?
Yeah, I do. Because I think for me, laughing is a healing. It's more healing than anything. Because I laugh mostly when I'm nervous. Like, that's when I laugh a lot, when I'm nervous. Or when I'm going through stuff, then I know I laugh and I know I'm going to get better
helps
after.
You release it, those
yes,
healing
rather
chemicals
than crying
and
shouting and stuff.
Ah, that's
if I laugh, then I know I'm going to calm down, I'm going to be fine.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Who makes you laugh the most? Is there anybody in your life who you feel like, I know if I'm around them, it's guaranteed?
My best friends.
Really?
My best, two of them, I know when I'm around them, I'm going to laugh the whole day. Like, we can just chill and not talk. And they'll make signs, either with their eyes or with their hands or with something random. Like, we'll be talking about maybe someone's shoes. And there's a way that we say, ish, look at the transport. Then we know transport is shoes. Then automatically, then we all know that, okay, it's that time. So I know when I'm with them, 100%, I'm going to laugh.
That's fascinating. I mean, humor and laughter therapy consists of the use of humorous materials such as books, shows, movies, or stories to encourage spontaneous discussion of the patient's own humorous experiences. So laughter therapy is an important technique. And we all know laughter is the best medicine. You've heard all of these sort of idioms and so forth. But it comes from a specific space. And that's why I want to get to that part. And so there are actually three types of sort of laughter therapy. And, you know, so dealing with the therapy, the process is facilitated by a clinician. It can also be used in conversation between medical professionals and patients. Laughter meditation possesses similarities to traditional meditation. However, it is the laughter that focuses the person to concentrate on the moment. Through a three-stage process of stretching, intentional laughing, and period of meditative silence, it is sometimes done in group settings. And then there's laughter yoga. Laughter yoga is somewhat similar to traditional yoga. It is an exercise which incorporates breathing, yoga, and stretching techniques along with laughter. The structured format includes several laughter exercises for a period of 30 to 45 minutes, facilitated by a trained individual. It can be used as a supplementative or a preventative therapy. Would you be open to laughter yoga?
No.
It does seem kind of weird, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Laughter yoga? I mean, imagine just sort of sitting there like, you know, people in an Indian pose, one leg across another, and you just burst out laughing.
Nah, yo.
But it works. And this is the key. I mean, to study it, it's fascinating. I mean, I want to go to another sort of form of sort of health benefits. There's an article by Christopher Berglund. He highlights a study by Celeste Green, lead author of a new study, and has a master's degree from Georgia State University. And in her research confirms, we don't laugh because we're happy. We're happy because we laugh. Long ago, Indian yogis intuitively struck upon this physiological and psychological benefits of spontaneous voluntary laughter and developed hasya yoga. The basic premise of hasya yoga, and that's H, if you want to Google it, H-A-S-Y-A yoga, is that self-initiated and simulated laughter done in a group quickly turns into genuine and contagious laughter. Have you ever been in a situation like you don't even know what people are laughing at, but you just burst out laughing with people? So, you know, I think it was back in the 50s or 60s. I'll look it up just now. But a girl's school had to shut down because of contagious laughter. You know, a couple girls started laughing and then it spread to about 95 girls. And this happened, I think, in sort of East Africa. The school, everybody started laughing and fits, and they just literally started. They could not stop themselves, so they had to close class. And that's not the only school. There was another school, and it was in Central Africa, where they also had the same thing. And in fact, the laughing contagion lasted for 2 years in that school. It was very challenging for the parents, the students, everybody, because they didn't know what was going on. But it's scientific. I mean, this thing could get bad. Like right now, it could happen in studio, and we could spread it throughout the entire Cliff Central. Can you imagine if it just got to a point where we couldn't even finish the show? Like, it could get that bad. Like, and what's crazy is that imagine, you know, you tell your friends, look, I can't go to school today.
Imagine.
Like, there's, you know, this thing has spread that deep. Anyway, the benefits of laughter are believed to be rooted in our nervous system. By putting the cart before the horse with self-initiated laughter. So self-initiated laughter is when you physically are just sitting there and you go to yourself and you go, I'm going to make myself laugh. And you physically initiate the emotions, the feelings, and you prop it up. Then there's a loop that happens and a feedback happens in the mind and your body starts to experience the benefits of laughter. The same way you would if you were just sort of laughing at Trevor Noah. Isn't that crazy?
What?
So you tap into this innate feedback loop. And any type of laughter stimulates diaphragmatic breathing, activates the parasympathetic nervous system, and triggers the tend and befriend response linked to healthy tone in your vagus nerve. You know I have to give you the science behind this stuff. Just 10 minutes of laughter is sufficient to trigger mental and physical health benefits. Just 10 minutes. After being diagnosed with a terminal illness, researcher Norman Cousins said, I make the joyous discovery that 10 minutes of genuine belly laughter had an anesthetic effect and would give me at least 2 hours of pain-free sleep. When the pain-killing effect of the laughter wore off, I would switch on the motion picture projector again, to which Marx and Brothers movies, and not infrequently, it would lead to another pain-free interval. So, ladies and gentlemen, when you are going through serious pain, initiate laughter within yourself. You trigger this sort of feedback loop, and the sort of pain healing sort of chemicals are released, and you'll find yourself. Now, if you get shot, you may want to go straight to the doctor. Don't try to make yourself laugh first. Go to the doctor. Go to the hospital. I'm just saying, like, if you get shot, you know, I know you, if you listen to this, you're taking it very seriously, and I appreciate that. But then there's some cases where you need to go. Like, if you're having a heart attack, you get my point?
Yeah, you need to go to the doctor.
Go to the doctor. Don't listen to Timothy Maurice and just start laughing. There are times, okay? So it's very important that, but on a very serious note, the reality is that in any other sort of circumstances, in any other sort of pain-related dynamic, you can find yourself healing through the power of laughter. There's a specific sort of laughter exercise fusion technique called Laugh Active. And it's a program combining voluntary laughter and exercise. The researchers note that the health benefits associated with combining laughter and exercise include lower mortality and a reduced risk of a number of chronic conditions such as coronary heart disease, high blood pressure, stroke, type 2 diabetes, metabolic syndrome, osteoporosis, colon cancer, breast cancer, anxiety, and depression. So imagine this. You decide you're going to go combine a little bit of yoga and laughter, some other physical exercise, aerobic exercise, and laughter, and you find yourself, your heart functioning better. I mean, that is the fundamental power. In a statement by Celeste Green, the lead author of this new study, she says, laughter is a terrific way to make people of all ages and walks of life feel better. Combining laughter and exercise is an especially effective way for an older adult. So if you've got people in your life, elders, and you go and you spend time with them over the weekend, because, you know, we get so busy and we get so caught up in our own young millennial lives.
Yeah.
Well, you're more millennial, not me. But millennials get so caught up. And if you know someone who goes to their elders and all they do is sit on their phone the whole time and they don't spend time, please smack them. Because if you go there and you spend time with elders and you make them laugh, you're extending life. You are physically extending life. So she believes that in her study that if you do this with older adults who might have functional or cognitive impairment, you can improve their mind, body, and brain function. It's incredible. And I think that's the big thing for me. And one of the reasons why I've gotten frustrated over the last sort of few years as social media has overwhelmed people's lives. And you see people out at sort of restaurants and they're not really connecting. And you realize that if they actually spent time and connected, they would literally boost their mental, physical, and spiritual health. Sure. And if you go beyond just connecting and you actually physically are engaged, you can produce this sort of laughter dynamic. I want to go to a quick break. I want to play a song. But when we come back, I want to give you sort of seven major sort of takeaways that I think are extraordinary when it comes to understanding sort of the power of laughter. Welcome back to Unbranded. I'm Timothy Maurice, and we're talking laughter, the science of laughter. There's an entire discipline around laughter called gelotology. G-E-L-O-T-O-L-O-G-Y. Gelotology. And it is sort of the study of laughter and its effects on the body from a psychological and physiological perspective. Its proponents often advocate induction of laughter on therapeutic grounds in alternative medicine. Today, we're exploring literally how laughter can help you deal with sort of pain tolerance, create social bonds, boost your immune system, and make you more likable. Before I get into our sort of seven sort of tips that I mentioned before the break, or seven sort of takeaways from this sort of key sort of study, this key discipline, I want to just sort of share with you some thoughts about how laughter makes you more likable. Dr. Jack Schaefer, in his sort of study, he says that people will like you if you make them laugh. He says anyone can tell a joke, but not everybody can make you laugh. And isn't it painful to watch somebody trying to make you laugh?
Yeah, yeah. So annoying.
Have you ever been listening to a speech or a talk when someone is just bombing? Like, yeah. The laugh. There's nothing more painful than watching somebody on stage trying their best to make you laugh. Or a comedian who's just...
And you're sitting there on some, you need to stop. Like, get off the stage. Because
it's nuts. It's bad. Like, and have you ever been on a horrible first date where they're just trying so hard to impress you? And everything they're doing, and they, so you remember they, because here's what happens. Let me just give you some insight. Because this guy likes you so much, he has gone to his friends. He's tried everything. He's gone online. He's Googled what to do on this date. And he's so hyped up. His adrenaline is pumping through his veins, and he is determined to impress you. And we all screw it up sometimes. But just so you know, the next time that it happens, grab his hand and say, it's okay. Relax.
If there is going to be a next time.
No, but I'm saying, like I'm asking you to be sympathetic to this guy. Like, it's happened to me before.
But.
Yeah, it's happened. And I can tell you, it's a terrible experience. To be sitting there looking across from someone you've got a major crush on, that you really adore, and you, everything you're doing is falling flat. And then there's that awkward silence. You know that awkward silence? Like... And you looking at them, they looking at you.
And
you're looking at them, they looking at you. And you don't know where to go. Your throat fills up. I mean, it's horrible. I got to tell you that, you know, the when I started studying this sort of science of laughter, so much stuff came into perspective. And I started thinking about the people I really enjoy being around and all the people that have created some of the best memories in my life. Then I was thinking about my father. And how my father, even in our worst times, I mean, I grew up in a sort of average sort of family, but things got really tough when I was a teenager. When I was a teenager, things got really tough because, you know, all the jobs in the States on the East Coast had moved to China. I can't say the word China anymore without thinking about Donald Trump. China. All the jobs had moved to China. They're going to China. Every time I think about the word China. Anyway, so... when all the jobs went to China, things got tough. And I remember every time my dad and the people around was dealing with difficult stuff, he would make me laugh. And it really helped usher us through life. Anyway, let's talk about the likability factor. And when it comes to the science of laughter, laughter provides a good indicator to determine if a woman likes a man or not. Would you agree with that?
Yes, totes.
Like if a man is, totes. If you're laughing on a date, the guy should feel pretty good about himself.
Yeah.
Okay. A woman who laughs at a man's jokes, no matter how lame they are, signals that she likes him. In fact, the more times a woman laughs at a man's jokes or joins in the laughter with him, the more she likes him. Men do not experience the same phenomenon, though. When women make them laugh, however, men are attracted to a woman who laughs at their jokes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is interesting for me because remember I said to you that when a woman puts out an, sort of an advert or she says, this is what I want in a man, yeah. She mentions laughter.
Yeah.
But men don't. Have you ever thought about that?
No.
I wonder, so from a scientific perspective, the thinking is this, is that if I am able to make you laugh, you assume that I'm more intelligent. You assume that I understand satire, I understand different types of humor, which means that I have stronger DNA. So you're assuming that if you partner with me and we bond together, that you're going to give your progeny or your children a better chance of survival if I can make you laugh. You will assume that if I can't make you laugh, I'm going to give you weak babies. It gets that deep. And this is important because the next time, if you've got a friend on a date and she's questioning whether or not she's stick with this guy who's not making her laugh, tell the girl.
Let go.
Let go. You're going to mess up your children. Now, this is important because from the safest humor is self-deprecating humor, though. You know, I want to make it clear that if you're going out there and you're really trying, you can't be making fun of other people. You know, it's important that, I mean, Chris Rock says it best, people with the most can't make fun of people with the least. But people with the least can always make fun of people with the most, right?
Yeah.
So if you're like super fit and you're like a bikini model, you can't make fun of people that are overweight.
Yeah.
It's just not right.
Yeah.
If you're rich, you can't make fun of poor people. Yeah. But poor people can make fun of rich people.
Always happens.
Right? it's easy to, you know, so yeah. That sort of contrast, you find that a lot of comedians, Trevor Noah is the one exception, which baffles me. But most comedians look strange and awkward. Have you ever noticed that? Like Kevin Hart, you know those faces he makes, right? He just makes a face and he looks like all the memes about Kevin Hart. But Trevor doesn't, he's not able to do that. You never see a meme of Trevor Noah. He's the one example that I've never seen anybody who's sort of attractive and a model looking person who actually does such a good job of making people laugh. And I think that the more I've studied it, I think it's just his backdrop. It's his sort of like the conflicts and the juxtapositions and the bizarre sort of nature that he grew up that sort of provides that awkwardness. So it sort of, it's almost like it subsidizes his good looks. And I think it's very interesting. And if you are sort of a model-esque looking person, you do have to sort of leverage a larger story to make people laugh. Because no one wants to, you know what? You know, it's hard to look at someone who look model-esque. And I mean, if you look at Samizi, for example, and I was looking at him on Idols and I was watching his behaviors, it's like a character. You know what I mean? Like, it's this character. But if you took someone else who just looks like a sort of a chiseled model and put them there, it would be, you would struggle. And I think back at some of my favorite comedians, Richard Pryor. It's more of their facial expressions and it's more of how they look. Anyway, so your likability, your ability to be able to connect with people is extremely important. Your ability to be able to sort of grow your career, the ability to be able to sort of elevate your life using laughter to promote and initiate and think more clearly and more intimately about how you engage people in your career, people will want to be around you more. People will often go, you don't have the skills, but I like you. I want you around. You boost endorphins. You right? So let's talk about those seven things. And also, I mean, fortunately, one of the things I love about podcasts, you can always go back and listen to the sort of the earlier part of this conversation. If you're just tuning in now, we're talking the science of laughter on Unbranded, where we explore the link between human and brand behavior. But seven of the big takeaways I want to explore is laughter. The object of laughter is often mundane, uninteresting, and humorless. More about relationships than jokes. So we talked about that a bit earlier. But I want people to get that, is that it's not so much a cognitive experience. It's much more of a lower sort of primitive feeling experience. So you want to sort of be sort of natural. If you want to use sort of laughter to help elevate your career, help in a negotiation deal, or help when it comes to sort of, because when you make people laugh at a negotiation deal, you really sort of, you take the tension out of the moment and you can like put them in the palm of your hand. Okay. Also, one of the big takeaways is speakers. Number two, speakers laugh 40% more, 46% more than the audience. Now, what does that say? It, oftentimes we get so caught up in what we're trying to do or our goal that we forget that this laughter thing is about relating to other people. I did a talk yesterday in Durban, and I was, you know, I made sure that the speaker, because it was a pharmacy conference, and the people were there, doctors, and very, very serious. So what I did was I primed the audience using the introduction. And I made sure at the very end of the talk that she mentioned when she introduced me that I love to laugh. So what they did was it signaled to them to expect that we're going to laugh together. And it worked. Because those type of people, you know, they are interested in sort of the deeper science and merit of the conversation and not just the actual the talk. So number three, women and men differ in laughter. When women are talking, men and women audiences laugh less than when men are talking. When women are speaking to an audience of one or more men, women laugh more than twice as much as men. Scientists have shown that these sex differences emerge in kids as young as 6 years old. So literally, even young girls, 5 years old, laugh more than young boys. Women laugh less as they climb the corporate ladder, though. Have you ever thought about that? Have you ever noticed? Have you ever seen a senior, like a CEO woman laughing?
No.
It's rare, isn't
it?
And here's, I wonder why. I think if you start thinking about the issue, is that women often feel like they're in a man's world. They need to act more
manly,
masculine, tough, and so forth. But I think that's a mistake. Because there's a way to contrast or to use a sort of a dual approach. And that dual approach is you can be very, very focused and serious. I mean, there is a woman I interview called Yasaman Hajibashi from Barclays. And she is extremely funny, but she's also extremely serious. So with every ounce of seriousness around the details of facts and her leadership capacity, she also makes people laugh, and people love her on her team for that. So I think you can combine the both instead of just sort of running from laughter. Number four, one of the big takeaways from this scientific research is that laugh tracks on sitcoms are used to trigger this sort of contagion effect. It's fascinating for me how, you know, if you're watching the sitcoms, like an old sitcom like Friends or any of these sort of comedic sitcoms, you hear these laugh tracks and it often prompts you. You ever notice
yes,
that?
Yes, it happens.
Yeah, and it's almost like it's an affirmative dynamic. Like, I find it funny as well. Mm-hmm. But even though you know it's a laugh track, after a while listening to it, you don't even pay attention to it anymore.
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing?
Yeah.
Number five. Now, this is, I want to get your, your opinion on this. Being laughed at is painful because it's a social muscle. Have you ever been laughed at?
The whole time. I think people laugh at me every day. Well, my friends laugh at me every day, and I don't think it's that painful because I laugh at them too.
Sure, sure.
So I think it becomes painful depending on the relationship with people.
I see.
So if it's someone that you don't know and they laugh at you, then you feel more insecure and it's painful and you don't know why they're laughing. Am I really that funny? But if it's people that you are close to and you bond with, if they laugh at you, it's like, okay, next time it's going to be on you. So it's that.
And have you ever thought about how it feels to when someone feels sorry for you and they fake laugh? Because the brain can pick up, it has very specific regions that can pick up fake laughter because it's seen as a threat to us.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So can you remember a time when someone was fake laughing at you just to appease you? How it felt?
No.
I've had it happen before in a small workshop where people could see I was trying really hard. This was early in my career. Mm-hmm. People could see I was trying really hard and I was trying to deliver this content. And they kind of felt sorry for me and I felt cold. I mean, it was like a weird sort of like cold, empty, horrible feeling I felt on the inside. And I don't ever want to feel that again. I just remember thinking to myself, fake laughter is terrible. In fact, when you go home, ask your friend, try to prompt them to laugh. Just say, on command, when I count to three, laugh. And then do it again when I count to three. So the first couple times, it may be actually funny because you're doing it.
Yeah.
But after a while, you'll feel that emptiness between the two of you.
I'll try it.
Are you with me?
Okay, I'll try
cool.
It.
And I want everybody to try that and see what your thoughts are. Another one of the big takeaways for me, particularly as I sort of explored this conversation, is that, you know, when you make people laugh early in your career, when you're from a mentee-mentor dynamic, mentors, the people in power, will want to engage you more. And I see that happening over and over again. That, you know, when you mentor someone, in the space that we live in today, people are busy. People are extraordinarily busy. So if you want people to mentor you, figure out a way to make it enjoyable for them. You've asked this high power person to come into your life and to engage you, to help sort of develop your career. Make it enjoyable for them, and they'll want to invest in you because you're boosting their health. You see?
Yeah.
So people feel guilty because you've got this high power person who's invested in your life. Don't feel guilty. Because if you give back to them in the form of laughter and you're making them feel better, you could actually extend their life.
Nice.
Right? And then the last sort of major takeaway in this sort of study is that in tough economic times, when things get really difficult and challenging, laughter is something that provides us a sort of way out of the pain. So we talked about the pain dynamics earlier, but what I mean is that you can escape reality for moments.
Yeah.
When things are really difficult and you're sort of drowning in stress and chaos, and there's political uncertainty, there's financial uncertainty, it's a way to sort of escape and find yourself depositing into a different space in life. And for those moments, you can really sort of find yourself in a sort of tranquil space.
Yeah.
So thank you for joining this sort of science of laughter conversation. Palesa, so you said you laugh a lot.
Yeah.
You got friends who laugh a lot. Do you have anyone who doesn't make you laugh, though?
I have this one other friend who is so serious about life, and they don't want to loosen up. And it's so exhausting to be with that person because you want to laugh, you want to have a good time, and they're just there, just looking at you like, are we ever going to stop?
And we all have those friends, yeah. Sort of mood-killing type
yes.
friends. If you've got a mood-killer type friend in your circle, please share this podcast with them. Let them know that they are triggering sort of stress hormones and that could actually be reducing life. And you want people around you who can promote life, right?
Yeah.
You want people around you. I mean, it's good to have a balance of friends. So, mm-hmm. you know, you want the class clown. You want the person around you who's super funny. You also want someone who's normal.
Yeah.
But you don't want people around you who are just sort of sapping energy.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Thank you so much for sharing with us on Unbranded today. We're going to have a special edition of Rianette's Cyber Health feature coming up in a moment, but I'm going to play a couple of songs if you're listening live, and then Rianette will be in shortly. We'll be back next week with another fascinating episode of Unbranded.
Unbranded on CliffCentral.com.
Hello, this is Rianette Leibovitz. I'm from Safety Net Cyber Safety. Thank you so much for joining us for this Cyber Health feature. I am so excited to be here today because you know what? I absolutely love it. I love sitting behind this microphone and bringing you some news. And there's so much to share that we just don't have enough time. So I'm going to be quick today. There's a couple of things I want to share with you. And speaking about laughter and so forth, I thought I would share some things about how to be funny online. But I saw something that made me wonder if you are also interested in what to do and what needs to happen for you to be arrested for stuff that you do online. Well, there are many reasons, and we'll go into that another day. But today, I'm going to focus on a story that happened quite recently. And I want to invite you, please interact with us at SaveteeNet. It's SaveteeNet.com. And you can contact me on Twitter as well. I'm at Rianette. It's RIANETTE. So what happened? There are so many people around the world who do crazy things, right? And some of it, it's okay. But let me tell you about two teen girls who got arrested after a 62-year-old man was attacked in a Facebook video. In New York, police arrested two teenage girls seen attacking a 62-year-old man in a viral post on Facebook in front of his New York home. The man told police he was assaulted Wednesday afternoon, and this was published, just so that you know, on 22 October, after politely asking a group of teens sitting on his lawn to leave. Don't see anything wrong with that. We don't know how he asked them, but anyway, he asked them to leave. What happened before the video was recorded is not clear, right? But the cell phone footage of the resulting confrontation, which has since gone viral on social media, shows one of the girls punching the man twice in the head. He tries to run after her, but a second girl spins him around as several teens laugh. Can you believe it? One recording with his cell phone. The man continues to give chase, but stumbles and falls face first in the street. His cane sliding away from him. So when you watch this video, they actually warn you to say that it could be upsetting because there's bad language, and also it's not nice to see someone fall like that and who's being, you know, slapped in the face. So the cell phone video of the alleged assault has been viewed more than 1 million times on Facebook. The footage has spread so widely that the man in the video says he's been contacted by relatives in Ireland who saw it. Police say they have arrested two girls, 14 and 15. Can you imagine being a teenager, not even sweet 16 yet, being arrested, who faced third-degree assault charges? Both girls, who aren't being named because they are juveniles, received appearance tickets and left with their parents. The mother of one of the girls told the media that she wants to apologize to the man, saying what her daughter did was uncalled for. She says her daughter will face the consequences and is expecting and accepting full responsibility. And the man says he suffered a bruised eye in the attack and is recovering. But I think something much worse than that happened. He's suffering total what will you call it? No more freedom. I'm sure everyone knows where he lives. People are calling him, following him, and actually probably harassing him now. So there are a couple of things in this story that caught my attention. First of all, look, if you are a friend, do you then take a video of this and actually post it online? We've seen that recently happen in South Africa where you think it's a trusted group and they go and spread the message. So I'm not sure if they are still friends. I doubt it. And this article that was distributed by Tribune Media Wire just made me realize again that everyone is the paparazzi. We hold cameras and footage in our hands and we have to be responsible. We have to choose whether it's good to share that message online. Is it relevant? Is it actually helping anyone? Will it defame anyone? And if it's dangerous, are you sure it's a good idea to post it? And in this case, we can see there goes two girls, let's say futures for now, and their digital footprints have been scarred for life. So it just goes to show that, first of all, good manners, things that we were taught 100 years ago, when before social media even existed. Good manners, respect for each other, respect for the elderly, and just, you know, being a good neighbor in that sense. So it is quite interesting, and it shows you it's quite easy to get arrested via social media. So let's be careful. So on a happy note, let's talk about how can you be funny to make people laugh? So Thomas Sanders is someone who's gone viral, and I just love his videos because he is narrating people's lives. And if you haven't seen Thomas Sanders before, you can go to YouTube and just see some of his lives, Vine compilations. He's got so many. And I mean, he's got over 1.3 million people have subscribed to his channel. The one video that I saw had over 600 views. Another one had over 1 million views. So it's really funny how he walks around and he's just being real. And I can't explain it because I'm not as funny as he is. But what I loved about it, and I promised I would give some tips on how to be funny in videos, is he's real. He's having fun. You can hear that he's actually really having fun, and he's sharp. He's not harming anyone, and I'm sure he got permission to actually post those people's video snippets. And remember, you can edit later. So get the footage. Be fun, be real, be goofy. Do what you want to do and then edit the footage later. Then in terms of distractions, if something happens that distracts you, it's okay. Sometimes it can work for your video. Make it work for your video. If it doesn't, then edit it out. And then there's parodies as well. So think about it before you do it. I mean, but there are some really funny ones. There are some that are, I think, a bit insensitive sometimes. But think about your audience. And then animals are always funny. I mean, whenever I want to just disappear for a moment or two, I search for funny animal videos because there's no offense. No one is harming anyone. Everyone can identify. And they are just so cool. So, again, you can go to the wires, go to YouTube. There's quite a lot of guys and bloggers who are experts in this, who can tell you how to be funny online if you want to make your video go viral. Something else that made me smile was when I attended the Rage Expo recently. Now, Rage Expo is like, it was an eye-opener for me. It was the first time I went. So I've always wanted to go, but this year I got the opportunity and I was invited by ASUS. They invited me because, and I'll tell you more about what they launched, but it was quite spectacular. The costumes, I must tell you, you must please go to their website and the Facebook page, and I'll share that on our SafetyNet Facebook page as well, because they had the most amazing costumes. And of course, I'm not a gamer, so pardon me for not knowing all the characters, but there were some really cool costumes. They had the Rage 2016 cosplays awards, and the overall winner was Jinx Kitty cosplay, and that was Kelsey Atkins with Alex Truster, the Lifebinder from World of Warcraft. So it was fascinating to see the amount of trouble people went through to wear these costumes and to get ready. And then something else that was quite fascinating to me, and I've heard about this a lot, but the LAN gaming section. I mean, imagine rows and rows and rows of tables and people arriving with their machines. And I'm not talking laptops. They arrive with serious big machines, right? And they bring their duvets and pillows because it's an all-nighter. They work in teams and they work throughout the weekend. It's a three-day event to play these LAN games. And it's serious business. They had a really good competition where millions of rands were actually at stake, where teams were entered, and it's, they talk about esports, and I have a new respect for esports. So guys, I know now that you don't just sit behind closed doors and play games. You actually, you craft and you are working hard to get fit and ready for these types of competitions. Another one that was quite interesting for me there, which I didn't expect, was a company called Board Games. And they have the coolest board games in terms of Warcraft, you name it. It's the really, really fascinating games that you can take offline. So when you want to disengage a little bit and engage with someone and look someone, a real person in the eyes, and actually have a real conversation face to face, then let's have some fun playing games. And I was astonished by the amount and vast variety of games that you actually get. So ASUS launched, they spoke a lot about the amazing, you know, technology that they actually offer. But ASUS Republic of Gamers has announced the GX700, and that's the world's first liquid-cooled gaming laptop with a detachable ROG, ROG exclusive hydro overlocking system. It's a cooling module. Now, why is this important? Because if you're a gamer, you don't want to stop. You need to go all night. And if your machine gets too hot, it will die. So this is one of those amazing machines that you can buy now that actually will keep you playing and playing and playing and hopefully win the game. So in terms of games, we will have a lovely conversation one day about that and esports, and I hope to interview some of the guys. It is just important for us to remember that you should be healthy, right? And if you're young, please watch out for those guys behind closed doors, behind their widgets and their names, because we don't want them to harm you. So from me, Rianette at SafetyNet, thank you so much for joining us. Travel safely on the cyber highway. Have fun. And remember, be careful what you post because it might get someone arrested.
Unbranded on CliffCentral.com. CliffCentral.com.